Have you heard of elder speak? It's that kind of simple language or baby talk that people can often use when they're talking to older people. And it's really just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to talking about the discrimination that many older people face when they go to the doctor or find themselves in other healthcare settings. In a sec, you'll hear from the Age Discrimination Commissioner about new research into ageism in healthcare, which heard experiences of older people being dismissed, excluded from decisions, and treated as just a number. It found that perceptions of ageism are widespread across all levels of the health system, from how older people are treated by staff to broader systemic and policy issues. Well, Val Fell knows firsthand what it's like to be ignored or spoken down to. Val's in her 90s and is on the federal government's Aged Care Council of Elders. Val, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you for inviting me on.
Do you find that people speak to you differently because you're older?
Oh, yes, yes. I've been experiencing this for many, many years. You know, people use a different language if they speak to you at all.
Interesting. So sometimes you're just spoken over. Sorry, I literally spoke over you to say that.
It's everywhere, in social settings, in the general public. You know, I can be out with somebody at a shopping centre, for example, and I'm with somebody else. So if I meet somebody whom I haven't seen for a while, they will speak to my daughter, for example, more than they will to me. And in fact, one lady even asked my daughter if I could still read. And in addition to that, if you go to a function at all, and this happened to me as well, and people will, the waiters at a table will treat you differently. They'll immediately assume, as one wine waiter did, that I would prefer to have a cup of tea than a glass of wine.
You're like, give me the wine, please.
The assumption is there, is once you are old, you are invisible.
So that would be very frustrating in a social setting, but it's really critical in a healthcare setting.
Oh, yes, yes, it is. I have experienced it. Where, you know, people who are supposed to be doing things for me will call me sweetie or darling or dear or love, you know. And that's a bit irky. Yeah, I'm nobody's darling, believe you me, you know. But that happens. But my experience in hospital myself, I unfortunately experienced this bedlock system that is on at the moment, and I was in the local hospital for 24 hours in emergency, and then they put me in a bed in a geriatric ward. Well, I am a geriatric, but I don't have dementia. Mm. And the majority of people in that ward at that time did have. And I, you know, the clinical care that we got was great. But there was this underlying sort of assumption that, you know, we're just old people. not from the staff, not from the clinical staff, but maybe from others who had, you know, things to do in the wards. And being locked in a dementia ward when you haven't got dementia can be a bit frightening. Mm. And it's isolating. This is the whole problem. It's associated not only with language, but with isolation as well. You know, once you get to a certain age, it appears that the majority of the public as well seem to think, oh, well, she hasn't got long to go. Mm. You know, we won't worry about that. So there's only one way to get over this, and I think Rob agrees with me as to a way of doing it, is to have some public awareness campaigns about the fact that people over 65 should not just be put aside and not sort of thought of seriously. They're just there, what, biding their time. And we can do that by having programs of intergenerational activities in education. Because a lot of young children never have contact with older people. Because it's not like it was in the olden days when your relatives lived around the corner and that kind of thing. People live in different cities. People are very mobile. A lot of children have never met their grandparents because they're still overseas, and that kind of thing. So we need to persist with that kind of thing to change the cultural awareness. Because I have found in doing those classes that with children that they develop a great rapport with the older people who are also involved in the group.
You mentioned Rob, who's Robert Fitzgerald, the Age Discrimination Commissioner, who's also with us right now, and Patricia Sparrow, who's the CEO of the Council on the Ageing. Robert, I started by talking about elder speak, and we heard Val's experience just now, but that's really the tip of the iceberg for how many older people are treated in the healthcare system. Can you take me through what your new research found?
Yes, thanks very much for having us. This discussion is really important because Australia is ageing at a rapid rate. And one of the most important connections for older people is the healthcare system. And so this report is really very damning of a healthcare system which does have an age lens, an age bias built into it, both in GP level and also in the acute level. This report shows very much what Val was saying, that people are not listened to in the decisions that affect them. They feel invisible and become voiceless in the system. Their concerns are actually diminished and attributed to being ageing. Often treatments are delayed because they don't accept what the older person is saying, and they have to go back multiple times to multiple health settings before people actually take seriously the illnesses. And often treatment options are not provided to older people, or in fact the outcomes are in fact very adverse because it's been left so long. So this affects the emotional and psychological well-being of older people who already feel a sense of vulnerability and, as Val says, a sense of invisibility, but it actually affects the treatment options that are provided or fail to be provided. And these are multiple examples, and I'm sure your audience has experienced it itself. The most important thing about this survey shows that, you know, older people do want a positive and healthy aging experience, but ageism is the absolute enemy of it. It's the very thing that destroys the opportunity to have a positive and healthy experience in aging.
It's, you're talking about people having delayed or not being offered care, not being able to be sort of connected to their care. Are we able to quantify what the health outcomes here are?
No, it's impossible to quantify. And so this work, we did last year a research piece that looked at national and international research. And what we discovered, there's not a lot of evidence available in Australia. What we do know is from older people themselves and the peak bodies such as COTA and all those that represent older people, that this is a real experience, an adverse experience that many, many older people are experiencing in their daily lives in relation to healthcare. What we also know is that there are things we can do and we need to do to minimise this sort of ageism that takes place in the healthcare settings. And the real challenge here is that it's often quite hidden. You won't find a policy that says you should not do these treatments for a person of 75 years of age or 80. But what you do see is clinical practice that clearly shows, without any doubt at all, that ageism is the lens through which many of these conditions are being seen. And so we have to change that practice. We also have to give much greater voice to older people as they confront the healthcare system. Put very simply, we have to learn to listen to them and listen to them with real intent, not just some sort of passing regard for what they're saying.
You are listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor, talking to the Age Discrimination Commissioner, Robert Fitzgerald. You also heard from Val Fell, who's 96 years old and is on the federal government's Aged Care Council of Elders. And you haven't heard from her yet, but Patricia Sparrow, the CEO for the Council on the Ageing, is also with me. And you are blowing up the text line right now. I'm getting so many stories. One person says, a doctor once greeted me very condescendingly with a, "And how are we today?" I replied, "I'm fine, but I can't speak for you. Had my 75 plus assessment yesterday and was classified as cognitively intact. I'm thinking of making a badge." Another says, "OMG, I turned 60 last year and have a partner in his 70s with multiple health issues. I advocate for him, but I'm often talked to like I'm a 3-year-old. Another says, "I've had two different experiences with my parents. My mother saw a psychiatrist in early stages of Alzheimer's. He spoke directly to her, not to me, and he respected her. However, my father's cardiologist was very dismissive of him. He spoke to me about Dad as Dad sat right next to me and was completely cognizant." Well, Patricia Sparrow from Council on the Ageing, listening to these stories, listening to the research that Robert's just detailed, does this come as a surprise to you?
Uh, Good morning, and thanks for including me in this esteemed panel of colleagues. Look, it doesn't, unfortunately. It is what we hear from older people every day. And as your listeners are actually calling in and texting in, they're reaffirming that this is all too commonplace for people. And it really does have a huge impact on them. You know, seen with my own family, seen with older people that I talk to, the everyday impacts this have of feeling invisible, not listened to, and in some ways that people don't really care and want to support you.
Ageism has a couple of different forms, doesn't it, Patricia?
It does. I mean, we talk about three forms of ageism. The first one being internalised, and it's something that we can all do is to check our own assumptions that we make about people who are older. And, you know, an example that I give, because it affects older and younger people, ageism. I mean, I was told at a young age not to let my hair go grey. I'm 62 now. I still go to the hairdresser and pay to get my hair dyed, because that stuck with me, because they said nobody will listen to a grey-haired old lady. And that actually shapes how you think about things. Another example that's in the healthcare space is, you know, one of mine, I'll go to the doctors and the doctor might be a very young, knowledgeable person, and I'll come out and go, well, he looked about 12. Mm-hmm. So even though we all work within it, we have these internalised assumptions about what somebody's age does, and we need to actually check our own assumptions and call them out. The second one that we see quite a lot in health and aged care, and this report that's been released today is really a seminal report to try and address some of these issues, is what we refer to as benevolent ageism. It's often not coming from a bad place. People think they're being helpful, and they will actually, as your listener said, will talk to somebody else because they think that's the right thing to do. But what it does is actually stops people from managing their own healthcare, from making their own decisions. And finally, we talk about systemic ageism, which Robert's report does cover as well, which is where things are built into a system. I think one of the good examples from the report is, you know, an MRI on your knee, which you can get if you're under 50 for no cost, but if you're over 50, it's not, it's at your own cost. So there are many things like that really impact on people. And as Robert's calling out, it's the absolute enemy of aging positively and healthily. And that's what we want to see for everybody of every age. And if we can fix it in the system now, for every age group coming through, it will be better.
So, Robert, let's talk about what reforms you're proposing. How can we change our healthcare system to be better?
Well, we're not waiting for anything to happen. We're starting next week. From next week on, we're starting a process of workshops with frontline health workers around Australia, funded by the Federal Department of Health, Ageing and Disability. And that's an important first step, because often we find with ageism, and we know this from workshops we've run in other areas, that people are not necessarily aware that they're being ageist, and once they're aware of that, are prepared to change. The second thing is we have to actually work with healthcare providers to ensure that clinical practice does not have an inherent bias based on age. And that's a very important issue. I said to you before that there's very few guidelines that actually mention age, but we know it's in the clinical practice, so we have to change that. And the third one is a much longer term one, and that is by introducing into the training of all healthcare professionals, allied health workers, doctors and nurses, course components around ageing and the way in which you deal with older people. It's not just about the conditions that are associated with ageing. It's about the way in which you treat and deal and listen to older people. Because one of the things that's very clear is that ageism has a detrimental effect on the emotional and psychological well-being of older people. And we have to stop that. So we want to do that as well. So it's about frontline training, it's about clinical practice, and it's ultimately about education of healthcare workers. The very final point is, what Val said, it's about community education. And this is really going to family members and carers, who often are actually allow the enablement of the voice of the older person to be diminished. And they've got to step back a bit, and when they're dealing with health professionals, not assume that they're going to speak on behalf of their mother or their father or their brother and sister. So that's a community-wide approach, and that's a much, much longer-term initiative.
Yeah, something we can all be part of. Robert, Patricia, Val, thank you all so much for joining me. Robert Fitzgerald is the Federal Age Discrimination Commissioner. Patricia Sparrow is the CEO of the Council on the Aging, and Val Fell is on the federal government's Aged Care Council of Elders. And I'm really loving the stories you're sharing with me of what you're doing to combat it in your own life. Eve says, whenever I take my mother to a medical appointment, I make a point of sitting back, not engaging with eye contact and holding my tongue to gently force the doctor to engage fully with my mother. I'm still there taking it all in and will ask questions if needed.
Listen to more great stories that take you beyond the headlines. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.